The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And we head into the second hour of the programme. Good morning to you. If you've just switched on, where have you been? We had really quite a powerful conversation with GP Dr. Padraig McGuinness. 78 of them have written to the Health Minister and other senior members of Sialta saying that you either do something about the ED, they don't believe they have faith in the current management system to fix the problems with ED, but if you don't do something about it, we are going to take to the streets. And they've outlined a series of measures, and they're going to call the public out onto the streets as well. A really significant intervention. It's going to be available for you to listen back to on our podcast, or you can rewind on YouTube if you're watching on your big screen. Hi, Greg. Delighted to hear that all the GPs in our county have written to the Minister for Health, pointing out the dangerous situation in the ED at Letterkenny Hospital. No one has done anything about it, or seems no one is listening to the patient or their families. This is our chance to change. So I do hope the minister listens and acts. It's a matter of life or death in many cases. As GPs said, cases of sepsis are being missed. And is there anyone listening? That's not the question. I hope there is. But is there anyone listening that hasn't either themselves got a story or someone close to them has a story? I don't think there's many out there that doesn't. I don't think I'm doing the service a disservice, if you know what I mean. I'm kind of normal and no normal people, and I could list four or five stories, horror stories. Like, let's not forget, the target to see an over 75 at Letterkenny University Hospital is 12 hours. That's the target. Now, that target's being missed quite regularly, but that's... It used to be 6 or 7 hours, but 12 hours, it's like, okay, if you're over 75 and you're sent to the ED, the target is to have you in a bed if you need one within 12 hours. 12 hours, sit on those hard, hard chairs or in the back of an ambulance as well. It's interesting that GPs are complaining about the safety and waiting times at Letterkenny ED, particularly given GP clinics stop taking calls once they reach a quota of calls. This is forcing people who need GP care to go to the ED. We get that, and it varies from GP to GP, but some are booked out for weeks and weeks and weeks in advance. A caller says, I know this seems trivial to some people, but the seating in Letterkenny ED is totally inappropriate. They're steel seats with no padding at all. Some people with bone problems cannot sit for long on these. I'd ask Mr. Murphy whether he'd like to sit on them. Also, the tea machine is rarely working. I wish these things could be addressed. And it's not insignificant, really. And we had an assurance at one point last year that cushions would be provided for the seats. I'm not sure if they ever were, or if they went missing or whatever happened, but we had, that was one of the insurances. We were saying, look, this is one problem that we can do something about, surely. And they were ordered, and then they're not there. Okay, so whatever happened. Now, a caller says that he witnessed a line of ambulances down to the roundabout waiting to get into the ED the week before last with people in them. And when he called the hospital to try and locate his family member, he was advised that he was still in an ambulance and would be for some time, but then received a call from his family member to say he was in ED, so the staff didn't know or don't know where the patients are. A caller works in the ED department and says there is no organisation at all and all of the issues could be sorted if the people in charge just put a plan in place, but instead they just keep talking with nothing being done. In the meantime, people are dying. The staff in the A and E feel that the only way is to take to the streets, and the general public should be taking to the streets too until this issue is sorted. Well, I feel we're heading towards that. And a caller says there's no way they'll manage to sort the problems in the hospital when they can't even sort the car park. The hospital parking is an absolute disgrace. And that's an issue, but one's life and death. But I take your point, and I'm not in any way trivialising your view there. Amanda joins us. How are you, Amanda?
I'm Graham.
All right, okay. Now, you had the enviable experience of being in ED, or the accident and emergency, for 36 hours.
Yep, 36 hours, I think.
When was that?
It was August. Wow. Yeah, in August. Mm-hmm.
What was... I mean, like lots of people who end up in the ED for a long time, they often worry more about others, and you were noticing other people's experience, even though you were going through a nightmare yourself. Amanda, what was it like? How would you describe it?
It was hard to watch, to be honest. I went on a Monday around 3 o'clock. Me and my daughter went down, mm-hmm. and we sat and went on to triage and out again. And I sat and I sat and I thought, right, I was getting later and later into the night. And I says, I'm going home. Like, I was a few times I did say I'm going to go home because I was just sitting there watching people. You know, there was wee girls sitting on wheelchairs and peeing, you know. But anyway, I come on to it later on that night, and the nurses come out and brought out blankets and stuff and for people to sleep. And there was people lying on the floor, sleeping. It was like something you see on a film that was an earthquake and an emergency, you know, something. It was really hard to watch. Sleeping. Next morning, everybody getting up, folding their blankets, putting them away. Nurses coming out to give them up. In all fairness, the nurses were brilliant. You know, they couldn't have done enough. And they come out at night, you know, with tea and toast and everything. They couldn't have done enough for people. But it was just and children sitting there, you know, and people Wayne's crying. Mothers couldn't get them settled. There was just no... It was awful to watch, like. You know, and I never thought it was as bad till I went on. It was really bad.
And how did you stick it, Amanda, for so long?
I don't know. I sort of sat there and you were sitting chatting to people. You know, it passed the time, but it was long. It was a long sit. And I was going to go home, but I'm glad I did sit because, you know, the turnout wasn't great, but... It's just other people. There was a fella that I knew was sitting beside me and he had a cut in his hand. And that fella sat a few hours after, he came in a few hours after me. He sat all night. He lay on the floor with a blanket and slept and got up the next morning and he was getting a bite to eat. And I says to him, I says, you know, if you don't get up and say it to the next nurse or doctor that comes out, you're going to be sitting there. So we did. He got up. And the door opened, I says to him, go on now, now's your chance. So he did, he went in, and he says to her, he says, how long are you sitting? And she says, I'll see, look about it now. And he was called within the next half an hour, and all he had to get done is two stitches in his hand, and he was in 10 minutes and stayed out. That's all it took. You know, I can't see why they couldn't have a wee part of the A&E, you know, for that, you know, like people with minor cuts or, you know, that need stitched or stuff, and then another part for older people and children, because it's just such a disgrace in this day and age to see it, like, to be honest.
I'm not asking anything personal, so please don't think I am, but one of you had to be admitted to the hospital after the 36 hours.
I did. I went on, and the first doctor diagnosed me, well, he thought it was something different. But then the other doctor came out, and I had to go for a CT scan then. So I went for it, and he came out, and he told me I had to stay. And to be honest, the words of the system was, you're joking me. Because I thought, I know what he told me wasn't great, but I thought, oh, what have I now? But no, in fairness. Well, I had to stay down in day services for a win of days, because there were no wards. And, you know, the beds down there, like, they're not the most comfortable. But the nurses were absolutely brilliant. They couldn't have done enough for me. And enough for everybody, you know. But
how long are you going to stick it, though, Amanda? I mean, how long could you stick that working environment? And the first thing that Dr. McGuinness said was is that this isn't about calling out the staff. This is about backing them and supporting them. And I've made that point in this show many's a time. This is not... to sort of demoralise people in their work or make them... We all know how difficult their job is, but how long are they going to stick it for? How long could any human being stick working in that environment before they have to say enough is enough? I know people have bills to pay, Amanda, but I couldn't stick it, not for a second.
No, I don't know. If you stand and watch them, the nurses and the... I don't know how they're doing it. You know, they absolutely need... They don't get enough praise. They don't get it. Enough wages because I don't know how they're doing it. You know, it's only for them. It's only for the nurses and the staff. I think it would be a lot worse, to be truthful.
Okay.
Because it's just a disgrace.
Yeah, and you would dread, you know? I presume, Amanda, if, God forbid, you're in good health, but if your GP says, right, I'm going to have to send you down to the ED after that experience, you would dread it.
No, I definitely couldn't do it. Wow, okay. I definitely couldn't do it, no.
All right.
That is, to be truthful. If I had it, and if somebody belonged to me,
I know, I
would do it. But I think it's because I became a, I said my family would always say I'm a laid-back person anyway, but I think it was just keeping people, talking to people, and, you know, older people, and I sort of lifted everybody, and everybody in the waiting room was very supportive of one another, you know, that kind of way.
All right,
and I think that's the reason.
All right, well, lovely to speak to you, Amanda. I hope you're feeling a bit better now, and thanks very much for helping us to understand exactly what the GPs are talking about there from a first-hand perspective. Have a lovely day, Amanda.
Lovely, great. Thank you.
Take care of yourself. Bye. Thanks so much indeed. That's Amanda there. 086 60 25,000. People are calling and people are messaging across various platforms with their stories, their experiences. My husband went into hospital last Sunday night in an ambulance with a head injury and broken ribs. He sat all night until 12 the next day and just left and went to his own GP. It wasn't busy at all that night, but it's a disgrace. So in with a head injury, broken ribs, sat right through to 12 o'clock the next day and just got up and left. And we have some of the highest rates of people, leaving without being seen. All right, okay, we're going to take a very short break. All right, you know the story, don't you? Councils up and down the country have their monthly meetings, and the councillors bring forward motions or questions to address issues. And we had Councillor Dermot Lacey from the Labour Party, who was contacted by a concerned resident, who didn't have some nice things to say, especially when we got involved. They described an area as being knee-deep in rat feast dentures, people from Donegal. It was a question on the agenda for the upcoming South East Area Matters Committee of Dublin City Council, and Councillor Dermot Lacey is with us. Good morning to you, Councillor. So how did this happen? Shall we start with the grovelling apologies, or should we get to them in a bit?
Well, it's very clear, Greg. First of all, the words were mine, and I did apologise for them in a question that I tabled to the area committee. I mean, I'm somebody who visits Donegal regularly. My brother lives in Donegal. I love the county. But it was my responsibility to ensure that the text I submitted was proper. What happened was I got a very long email, if I remember correctly. It was about 3 pages long. That wasn't the only offensive comment in the email. And I edited out what I thought was all of the offensive bits, but left in one bit in error. And for that, I obviously apologise. It shouldn't have happened. I shouldn't have included it. I didn't intend to include it, but I did. And so reading it all together would appear that there was an offensive comment made. And obviously, that was not my intention, and I apologise.
Yeah, and is there an issue at Beggars Bush Court? Like, do you believe this resident has a point, albeit no need for the nasty language?
I don't think he has a case in relation to Donegal people, but I think there is a bit of dirt there. There is a lot of pieces there, and it should be cleaned up. And that my only intention of submitting the question was to have the area cleaned up, but. The email came to me, and there it was my responsibility to deal with it. It was quite an extraordinary email. I'm not going to go into it. It's an email from a private citizen to me. It's a public representative. But when I saw it, I said, look, there's an issue in there about cleansing. But the language and some of the references made about various council staff and so forth were not acceptable. And as I said, I tried to edit out everything that I thought was offensive, but left in that bit, and apologies to all of the people of Donegal.
That's all right. Okay. And you haven't been cancelled or anything, have you? You're all right.
Well, I suppose if I haven't been cancelled after 31 years of fairly forthright views as a councillor, maybe I'll, you know, stay there for a while more.
Is there a big Donegal population in Beggars Bush Court?
I don't know. To be honest with you, but there's a good population of Donegal people, in Dublin. I've served with former Councillor Michael Conlon, indeed a Lord Mayor, former Lord Mayor of Dublin. I currently serve with a local Councillor Danny Byrne, who's also from Donegal. So, Donegal has played a constructive role on Dublin City Council, and long may continue to do so.
All right. Listen, thanks very much for joining us. We appreciate it, Dermot. Take care of yourself.
Good to talk to you. All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. That's Dermot Lacey of the Labour Party. And as I say, in that documentation or that email he received from a listener, he described that area of Dublin, Beggar's Bush Court, as being knee-deep in rat feces, dentures, people from Donegal, which is not very nice company for us to keep. But anyway, it was an oversight from the councillor, and there's an awful lot worse going on in the world, isn't there, than that. But still, there you go. Well spoken, Dr. McGuinness. Thank you, Greg, for giving this time to be heard. I've been waiting for a development like that. I didn't anticipate it or expect it, but I've been waiting for it because you try and spotlight and highlight these issues, and many people do. I'm not saying it's me, but many people do. And you get frustrated because it feels like no one's listening or no one cares. So for patients, I'm sure they'll feel a very positive intervention by the GPs there. About time this was brought forward, says a listener. Fair play to the GPs for speaking up. For far too long, the hospital in Letterkenny has been punching above its weight. Go down the road to Sligo to see what staff they have in the hospital. An audit should be done to see how fair it is. We are the poor cousin to Sligo in every department. Hi, Greg. I've been a St. Union supporter all of my life and was up at the game yesterday, but I have to say congratulations to Martin Regan and Niamh Connell. He's the fairest and best manager this country has seen at club level. That comes in from Noel. Very gracious, Noel. I think some St. Union's fans may be a little bit frustrated that perhaps maybe the team could have gone for it a bit. I don't know. But you know who will know? Brendan Devaney, who is going to join us after 11, and we're going to run through the weekend's GEA action. If you're at any of the games, have any comments on any of those games or questions for Brendan, get them into us, 086 60 25,000, and we can have that conversation after 11. Not just the seniors, either, any other games. And there's big weekends coming up next weekend. Every weekend, it seems, there's another cracking match to look forward to. Finally, before the break here, I'm texting about the long waiting list for driving test in Donegal. We live in Inishowen with a very poor public bus service. My daughter has all her lessons completed and applied for her test back in the middle of August. She was given a time that she will get an invitation to do the test, April 2024, which has since been pushed to May 2024. That's a waiting time of 9 months. This is absolutely ridiculous. She has work experience for college in February, 24 was hoping to have her license for this, as there'll be no bus covering the route in the morning or evening, leaving me as her mother having to drive her there and back again. It is an awful situation. There's just no doubt about that. And, you know, that date could slip again because, dependent on the winter or people taking holidays, there could be an awful lot of cancellations over the Christmas. I got someone was invited to apply for their test on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve. Do you know what I mean? It's automated. So it may well be that she doesn't even get the invitation in April next year, but it's really terrible. She's sitting there ready to go, all the lessons done, and a 9 month wait to sit your driving test. We need to do our bit, of course, you know, to make sure roads are safe and we get around and all that kind of stuff. But the state, the arms of the state, need to step up, really, and let people, when they're fit to drive, be able to drive, especially in a county that has hit and miss public transport. An incredible loss of life over the weekend in this unpredicted, it wasn't. No one knew it was going to happen other than those behind it. These events on Saturday. I'm struggling here because I want to be careful how I phrase this to you, because I know that you're probably conscious that now the media are talking about this, but where have the media perhaps been for the last number of decades when your people were experiencing what they're experiencing? So I understand it's a very delicate topic, Majida.
Yeah, it is. It is really tragedy now in the moment. It is high tragedy and normal, but it is normal in Palestine. They get attacked all the time. They bombing all the time. They kill them all the time. But unfortunately, the people, they are like deaf and blind about what is going on in Palestine. It is really funny that when they ask you, it is normal what is going on? It is, of course, it's not normal. It's going on since 1948 until now. The Nakba in Palestine never end and never stop. But the people, they get bored and they normalize what is going on. I hope that will take place now and we vote everything clear about our dignity and about our case, to be clear and hold the word that we are not give up and we are not forgetting our right in our land. So the fighting now, it is clear, and that our land, and we bought all our lives to get it back.
I understand exactly why this action was taken, but as someone who I don't have a personal interest like you might have, you know, shooting at people at a concert and taking, you know, children hostage, older people hostage, you know, people with dementia being photographed holding weapons, and is that going to help the cause? I mean, do you believe that that's justifiable given everything that's gone on before, Majida, or do you think that tactically this was the wrong move?
Sorry, but why it is no one talk about the Palestinian who get killed, about the children, Shechem Point. What about the destroyed in the hospital with everyone inside? What about the school bombing and all of them inside? What about the ambulance who shooting and bombing in the Shechem Point, or leave the people who want to just cross the border for the hospital? No one talk about them. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they are Israel? No, I'm sorry. We are all here.
Yeah. So that answers the question, given what Palestinians have been through and the atrocities that have been delivered onto them, then this action at the weekend, you believe, was justifiable or is justifiable. It is okay.
It's okay for me because I lost a lot of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost our land. We lost our right. And no one talk about it. We are invisible for the world, and Israel only visible for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it is normal. It is normal because we live all our life like that.
Yeah. The thing is though, this seems to have rallied support behind the Israeli leadership, and they are incredibly well equipped and have declared an all-out war. And perhaps have enough international backing now to do whatever they see fit to do. How worrying is that for you?
I worried about my family, and I care what is going on. It is not easy to lose people. It is not easy to lose family. It is not easy to destroy houses or hospital or schools or lands or even tree.
Mm.
Everything is really a matter for me, but I cannot just ignore that for the people what are thinking about us.
What do you think happens next?
We will continue. We will continue until the last person in Palestine and whole the world. We will fight very strong to take all our land from the river to the sea.
And do you believe you can be successful in that? And if so, how?
We will find a way. We will find a way. In a way or another, we will do it. I know everyone, like in all the countries, they support in Israel to support them with money or weapons. We will find friends in the end, and all in all the history, there is always the reality will be in the ground, not only what they are publishing in the media, what they are telling the people about what is going on. We are also, we have a friend, we have ourselves first of all.
How worried are you for your country people?
100%. 100%. Because I trust my Palestinian people, our Palestinian faith, about our Palestinian case and our Palestinian land. And also I believe in Allah, He will support us. not only as a Muslims, but as a Jewish also, as a Christian who live and believe in freedom of Palestine. I believe in all of them. They will find a way to fight very strong. But also, I believe that the correct things and the correct war, it will come in the time.
Okay, well, thank you for your time this morning. I do appreciate it. That's Majida Ali there, who is a Palestinian activist from Gaza, now living in Bunkrana. As I say, it's an incredible, incredible sad loss of life, and just more of it to come. We're seeing what's happening in primarily East Ukraine, and now this, hundreds and hundreds of people perishing. As I say, it's just going to continue, it would seem. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. A caller says, should the Palestinian flag be flown outside our public service building in Dunloe today? Just wondering what others think. That comes in from a Dunloe listener. I don't know. What do you think? 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Right, okay. If you've been listening to this show over the last month or 6 weeks, you would know that we've been talking extensively about CDNT services, the lack of them, the lack of hope there is for parents and guardians to get intervention with their young people. Leonard Watson is a member of the Special Needs Parent Network, and he's dropped into studio to say hello to us. Thanks, Leonard, for joining us. I do
Morning,
appreciate
Greg.
It. Okay. Obviously, you know, we talked about this extensively in this show. A group was formed. An awful lot of work has been going on behind the scenes. Where are we at now in terms of, you know, parents and guardians organising to say enough is enough?
Well, Greg, you had the two ladies up a couple of weeks ago who set up the fake Facebook page. I'm just going to give it a shout. It's Special Needs Parents Donegal. So any family with children or adults with special needs can go on that page, and it's an information page. They're doing surveys and that. They're doing a lot of work, a lot of work for parents with special needs children themselves. They're doing Trojan work. What we're looking at now, Greg, it's all well and good. HSE has come back now with certain things. You know, where they have started pushing out the staffing issue, but that doesn't solve it, the issue now. Like, we need services now. Like, you know, some of these things they're chatting about, it could be staffing 2 years, 3 years. That's no good for the
And even in our
today.
Conversation there with Minister Harris last week, I just thought it important to get his views on this on the record. He recognises the issues in terms of, I don't know, qualification recognition and all that type of stuff. But the solutions, as you say, are medium to long term. This is, we need immediate solutions now, whether it's accessing, I don't know, private or sending people, whatever it might be, an action plan, is it felt, needs to be put in place for the immediate short term now.
Like, Greg, even some of the stuff's coming up at the moment. Like, there's primary care at the moment. Like, we have a parent whose child was in primary care getting regular speech therapy, and the child then was moved to CDNT and all speech therapy stopped. Like, another family who the nephew has a slight speech problem, again with primary care, which all children should be equal. But again, her child is non-verbal. He's getting absolutely nothing. And primary care seems to well staffed. So again, there's a disparity here. Like, you know, there's no equality across the system. So that's the kind of things we're looking at. Like you say now, should it be private? Should it be private care? Things around key workers. Key workers should not be therapists. Like, you know, therapists should be there to do their 30, 35 hours therapy a week. They shouldn't be having to deal with other stuff that they weren't trained for. Like. Mm-hmm. So like, we're here, we're speaking for families and children. We're also speaking for the staff and the system too, because the loss of the staff through the system is huge. Like, you know, the staff are leaving on their droves. Like, and that's not helping either. Like, you know, there's no point us taking two or three in and we're losing five or six. Like, so between retirement and people just leaving the system because they're fed up, they're, you know, they can't cope. Like, so all these things is the things now. Like, you know, we have a meeting now with the HSE on the 16th, as you know. Like, and this is the kind of things we're going to be bringing to them. Like, you know, this just didn't have happened yesterday or the day before. This has been going on for years, and the system is broken, and they now need to come and they need to fix it, because these families aren't going to be quiet anymore now. Like, these families,
the likes of yourself and others have worked really, really hard in trying to get the message across, trying to get a equal, good, accessible service. And there's been successes in that, but it's different now, because now we've got a collective of many, many parents. It's a much stronger, more united voice, Leonard, that's going to be much more difficult, we would hope, for the powers that be to ignore.
Like I've always said, the parents, there's parents out there, they're tired, they're angry, they're frustrated, but now they have come together. Like, and that's what we're saying about even these CDNT meetings now. We need as many families as possible to go to their local CDNT meetings and voice and show their anger, and because we need to show the HSE and the politicians that this can't go on any longer. This is, it's a tragedy, Greg. Like, we have children, with children in wheelchairs that are too small for them now. You know, there's areas now with no OT and no physiotherapy. Who's going to measure the children for the new chairs or the new equipment? Like, you know, it's just unbelievable that this kind of thing's going on. And, you know, we're dealing with children and vulnerable people. Like.
So the meeting that's coming up here, sorry, can I talk about the 16th meeting? Sorry,
yes.
who's in on that? Whose ears are you going to have for that? And what's going to be the message at that meeting with the HSE on the 16th?
Well, this is the heads of the HSE, the local, to be local politicians there who are part of the HSE. They sit on the boards of the HSE.
Gotcha.
They will be there. You've got the 8 reps from the CDNT parents forums. So we'll be there. And we'll have another couple of parents there too that we're bringing in. Joe and Lisa, we bring them in because, in fairness, they speak for a cohort who we don't get, like, and, you know, they have a lot more knowledge than us. But that's the meeting there, and this is the meeting we want them to listen. We don't want to.
And was that meeting scheduled? Was that supposed to happen anyway?
No, this was a meeting that, from all this has happened.
Brilliant, okay.
Now, in fairness, the heat has come on, and in fairness, the politicians now are getting on it. They should have been here years ago. That's the only thing I'll say. Like, you know, so they now start listening to the families in their area. You know, I would tell any family that's having, contact your politicians, contact HSE. You know, at the moment, we know HSE is bombarded by now with people contacting them about services. This needs to happen. They need to know how bad it is out there.
Yeah, because, you know, they're talking about, and the headlines all being flagged in the papers about, you know, we're going to put €800 back in your pocket. I prefer if you would say, well, actually, we've secured an OT now and your child's going to be able to get the support that they need. Do you get where I'm coming from? It's not all about money for us sometimes. We need money, of course, and whatever, but it's services that we'd like to see some action on. That would be the real vote winner, I think, anyway. So that meeting's taking place on the 16th. And the thing now is everyone's going in with their eyes wide open, all the information. They're not going to be fobbed off with stuff. I think everyone can see through the talk now. Unless there is some meaningful conversation about what can be done right now, I think it's not going to be seen as a very successful meeting. You know, people aren't prepared to accept
mediocrity. We're hearing about a bit of work done in the panels, and even they're a perfect example, Craig. I can be on the panel now. I can turn down 2, 3, 4 positions. I don't lose my place in that panel. You know, so the panel's eternally full of people maybe that are trying to pick and choose. You know, at the end of the day, if you have a vocation to go into work and special needs, that, go take a job, like, you know, maybe even incentivize them to come to areas like Donegal or whatever for a while to try and get, like, we're sitting, I think it's at 55% average Donegal, the staffing.
Yeah, but you see, that's the problem. I think it's, I know they wouldn't probably not like being described as a vocation. You know, these are professionals and you know, they've got bills and all that type of stuff. But, you know, why would they come and work in a, it's a chicken and egg. If there's so few staff, why would you come here and be stretched all over the place for the same money that you might get in a better resource place in Galway or something? Do you know what I mean? So they need to incentivize it till we get up to a certain level and it's seen a more attractive proposition to work here.
But, you know, like, at the end of the day, Greg, staffing isn't parents' issues. Like, this is HSE. These are well-paid people. This has not just happened yesterday, as I keep saying. Okay. So now they need to get their finger out and start thinking about the people in the system.
So then the CDNT meeting on Wednesday, the 18th of October, so that's Wednesday week, that's at the Mount Errigal Hotel. You're also calling people to attend that, are you?
Well, any parents whose child is involved with CDNT.
In Donegal North.
In Donegal North, that's the meeting now on the 18th in the Mount Errigal. They tell us there's 350 families involved with CDNT, probably is more. I would call every one of them to come to that meeting. Like, we need a strong voice to say that we're not accepting poor services anymore for children. There's a meeting then in Donegal Southwest on October 17th. Now, this meeting has been held on Zoom at 5 o'clock in the evening. Parents are not happy about that. It's not suitable.
Why is that?
Like, Greg, I've been on Zoom meetings a lot. The quietest person will not be heard. Like, where if they're in a room, they might have the courage to stand up. I don't know what.
Even at 5 p.m.
You know, this is not thinking of families with children again. Like, you know, people maybe trying to cook dinners at that time, trying to get settled.
Or get home from work or get them back from work.
Parents have, I know parents have contacted. They've had no answers back to say why this is. So that's something that should not be happening. These should be in-person meetings as much as possible. Like, you know, so that the people have to be answerable to, you know, you have to face up and be answerable to this. And it's also come with ideas, you know, well, how we can make this service better. Like, you know, parents out there have ideas. We shouldn't have to fix the system, but we should be part of fixing the system.
No, Zoom's not appropriate for something so important. No, absolutely not. And then Donegal East, Inishowen, Donegal South, Sligo,
to be arranged.
So hopefully they hear the calls about this the Zoom situation. That's on tomorrow week, and then the in-person Mount Errigal. Is there any advantage for people from outside the Donegal North area coming to that meeting?
Do you know what, Greg? I'll say it's open to everyone. But they'll probably tell me it's only open to Donegal North.
I get you understood.
You know, it's about the services in Donegal North. You know, at the end of the day, these meetings are about information too. You know, going forward, hopefully we sort of staffing issue. We should be able to tell families about what other...
So what have you heard about the staffing issues that's given you a little bit of hope in the medium to long term?
We've heard now that the panels, they've swayed away from the panels.
Right.
They're now doing interviews. We've been told now that Donegal is a special case. They're now trying to get more interviews done, everything done quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gone blank here.
It's all right, come here, isn't it, though? Like, we can't rejoice until we start actually, you know, seeing some success, some
action.
Well,
it can't be a stick and plaster, Greg. But we just cannot see a stick and plaster.
It is. Since all this started, things are changing a little bit. Hopefully, as I say, we have to see what's delivered. But it's clear now the community got together and can't be ignored because they're not going to go away if none of this happens.
Well, do you know what? I've heard about adverts on Facebook. I haven't actually seen them. Parents have told me. But
it's a specific Facebook page,
yeah,
apparently.
But now, yeah, that's what I've heard of. But now somebody has told me they've actually seen it, an advert.
Good.
Now,
well, that's because we've seen all other disciplines being advertised. Why not it?
Like, because like even my wife said to me last night, she's seen an ad somewhere for staff in Northern Ireland. And all the therapies was mentioned and how much they need them. Like, yeah. I haven't actually...
No, neither have I ever come across it now.
You know, but like, again, radio ads, all this type of stuff, you know, there should be it's an emergency.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Right, okay. So if you haven't... The meeting in the Mount Errigal Hotel, parents would be, if they're engaged with the services, the 350 they estimate, they should have received an invite to this meeting at the
Mount
Errigal.
They should have either received an email or a text message. If they haven't, contact, actually, the special needs parents don't go, put it up on that page.
Mm.
Contact myself, private message if they want, because this was an issue at the last meeting. And a lot of parents came to myself and see who's the other parents rep afterwards and says, oh, we didn't know about this meeting. We brought this up. They said everybody was contacted, and then not everybody was contacted.
So listen, picture the scene. Can you imagine if there's hundreds of people in the Mount Errigal Hotel? It's very difficult to ignore that.
Greg, it's the numbers is the only way to go there. You know, we've all been single voices. So we've all been fighting our own cases. Now we have to come together as one strong voice, and we have to change the system.
Right, okay. Cool. So a couple of important dates for you, just to recap then. Donegal North, Wednesday the 18th of October at 7 p.m. in the Mount Errigal Hotel. If you're engaged with those services, get along to that meeting is what is being said. And we'll get an update with you as to what happens with this meeting on the 16th.
Yeah.
Where's that taking place?
That is taking place in the Clanry.
Right, okay.
That meeting is only
It's a private meeting,
it's a private meeting.
Yeah, but in other words, you don't have to travel down to Galway, really, was the motivation for the question. But we'll keep people updated as to what comes to that meeting, and hopefully they come with something because of the, you know, the significance of the situation.
Well, that's what I think, Greg. Now, this is our opportunity now for speaking for our children. Mm-hmm. So, as I say, encourage all parents to involve with CD&T. Please come to that meeting in Mount Errigal. Again, the Donegal South West one the night before. Please go on that Zoom meeting. I know it's not perfect. Maybe they might change it now as parents would get done.
Yeah, well, we must get in contact with them and ask the motivation for putting it on at 5 o'clock in the evening and doing it on Zoom. I'd be interested in their explanation.
Yeah.
Okay, Leonard, unless there's anything you want to add.
Well, just again, I'd like to thank you and Highland. You have highlighted this very well. Congratulations on your award. Well worthy, like, you know, to you and the team here. But no, listen, we have to keep the noise going because, you know, we just can't go quiet. And
But we're starting to prove time and time again that when people organise themselves and use outlets like this and others, that's when we start to see change and action. And as I say, we're not counting our chickens yet because there's a long way to go on this, but we're going to keep right on top of it, Leonard, and hopefully things ease for all of those people affected by the lack of services here. Well done to you, Leonard, for all the efforts that you're putting in, as always, and have been for a very long time. We really do appreciate it. And thanks so much for joining us. And we'll chat again after that meeting on the 16th.
Thanks very much, Craig.
All right, back with the news shortly.